Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Juno Afternoon for this Friday. I'm Andy Klein, your host for today. Today we're going to be hearing about fall classes at the Learning Connection, including GED and English Language and Citizenship boot camps. We're going to get details on the latest cosmic activities at the Marie Drake Planetarium. We're going to find out how to attend the UAS School of Career and Technical Education Open House. News director, KTOO news director, Jeremy Shea is going to be here to give us an elections update, and we're going to get warmed up for the Juno Symphony 2018 and 2019 season. That's all ahead coming up on Juno Afternoon. First, National Native News. Stay tuned.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. As the August 28th primary nears on the Navajo Nation, which includes the race for president, issues are raised about the cancellation of registrations of more than 52,000 Navajo voters. Registered members of the tribe who did not vote in the 2014 general election and the 2016 chapter election were purged from the rolls. Charlene Wallace is troubled that younger generations, especially students away at college, may now be discouraged in taking part in Navajo Nation elections.
Right now, my only concern is our younger folks. And I've got one individual that came into my office. She had been purged after voting one time.
Wallace is the chapter coordinator for Cottonwood, located near Chinle, Arizona. More than 500 voters from her chapter house were purged. Wallace hopes young people will re-register.
From the point of view from the younger folks, you know, they get disappointed when they are treated this way and they don't want to come back to the chapters to, you know, to support the Navajo Nation.
The reason behind the purge is due to law, according to the Navajo Board of Election Supervisors. The board voted in January to cancel the registrations, citing voters were given a 30-day notice about their registration status. Marvin Harrison is chair of the Board of Election Supervisors.
In our policy, it states that the election office provides a voter cancellation, which is people refer that to as purge. Because of some of the funding issues and some of the staff turnover back in February, we didn't do the purge till late fall. But once staff and funding came available, we proceeded with it.
Harrison says it's important for voters to update their names, addresses, and chapter affiliations. Voter registration is now closed for the primary. People who did not make the July 30th registration deadline for the primary still have a chance to vote in the November general election, with registration opening next month. As of August, more than 93,000 voters were registered, according to the Navajo Nation Administration. The average voter turnout in Navajo Nation elections is typically less than 50%. The U.S. Department of Energy has awarded $1 million to help the Spirit Lake Tribe install a wind turbine on the Fort Totten Reservation in North Dakota. The tribe will fund an additional $3 million for the project. It's expected to provide more than 60% of the tribe's energy needs and help the tribe save thousands of dollars annually. The Spirit Lake project was one of 15 selected nationwide. The department announced this week nearly $9 million in funding for the tribal energy infrastructure projects. The funding is intended to help Native Americans and Alaska Native communities reduce or stabilize energy costs, as well as increase energy security. The Ponca Tribe of Nebraska recently dedicated a statue of Chief Standing Bear. A ceremony was held at the tribe's annual powwow. People from the Nebraska tribe and members from the Ponca Tribe of Oklahoma took part in the ceremony. Chief Standing Bear is well known for standing up for his people and their homeland in the 1800s, which was reflected by speakers at the unveiling of the bronze statue. The Santa Fe Indian Market is kicking off this week in New Mexico. The more than 90-year-old Native art market attracts people from around the world to the Southwest. Held each August, more than 1,000 artists from the U.S. and Canada showcase their work. Buyers, collectors, and gallery owners are among the many visitors who have the opportunity to meet the artists and learn about their culture and work firsthand. Indian Market Week events also include film, music, and fashion. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is by Odawi Law Group, provider of Indian Law Solutions, and by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite System.
Support by Freedom Lodge, presenting Body and Earth, the future of Native wellness, with leaders including Chief Arvo Looking Horse, sharing wisdom which protects our lives and lands, September 12th through the 15th, Mystic Lake Casino. Registration through September 12th at bodyandearth.org.
And by the law offices of Sanofsky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller, and Monkman, a national tribal rights law firm with offices in Washington, D.C., New Mexico, California, and Alaska, and online at sanofsky.com.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
Jazz and Classic presents Juno favorite Zoo Bailey and Friends in a special evening for four cellos at the Jack, September 2nd. Favorites by Bach, Bruch, Couperin, and Schumann, and a vintage mix of classics and rock by contemporary composer and cellist Patrick Laird. Tickets at Halfsite, the Jack, or jazzandclassics.org. Celebrate the Labor Day weekend, Sunday, September 2nd at 7, Zool and his friends, and Cello times 4.
Welcome back, Juno Afternoon. Andy Klein with you, and Jeffrey Smith from CIRC is here with me, Southeast Regional Resource Center. Jeff, thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me,
Andy. Yeah, so you've got, this is your gearing up.
We are gearing up, gearing back up from summer break, ready to go.
Right, so I guess, like you were saying, okay, let's cover these four things we want to talk about, right?
Yeah.
So let's talk, we'll start with the something that people, I think, really know CIRC for doing a lot of is the English language and citizenship stuff that you guys do. So you got kind of a boot camp coming up for that?
Yeah, so with our English as a Second Language program, we kind of accept people at all levels, whether they're just here, you know, learning English for the first time, or, you know, maybe they've been here a while and developed some skills but need to work on writing and reading a little bit.
And so you kind of adjust that to whoever comes in the door, and you sort of figure out a curriculum that's going to work for them?
Yeah, we do. We have like four levels, and based on some intake assessments we do with people, we place them into those levels based on that, you know, just to make sure that it's at the appropriate level for them. And then our classes, it just kind of depends on who we have there. You know, sometimes we might have to split it up to make sure that we're reaching everybody. And other times, you know, we might just find somebody, a one-on-one tutor that they can work with or a more appropriate class that they can attend. But coming up here in September, starting September 10th, we're going to have that ESL and citizenship boot camp. It's going to be like a three-week class, and they're going to be 2.5 hours a day, Monday through Friday. So it's kind of a
really
commitment.
Really intensive,
but,
yeah.
Yeah,
right.
But if somebody, if that fits around their schedule, they could really make a lot of progress, especially if they're looking at citizenship. They have to take a test. I think probably 7 out of 10 people that we pass on the street probably couldn't pass that test.
Right. People who come here and become citizens know so much more about the country in a way because they've had to really study all about that. Yeah.
Maybe we should make a video walking around the street asking some of those citizenship questions.
That'd be really interesting. Yeah. Just show it to the folks in the class going, don't feel bad.
Exactly. That would be a really good part of an orientation.
Typical American doesn't know these things about the Constitution, but
exactly.
You're going to have to.
Exactly. So
right,
they gotta, you
right.
know, there's a 100-question bank, and they got to get 7 out of 10 that they happen to get. So we're going to help prepare them for that and give them some background knowledge and really work on those, you know, reading, writing, speaking, listening skills all throughout. So,
yeah, cool.
And
it's cool that, like, these English as second language programs, you know, you kind of have this stereotypical view of these terrible classes that people have to go to and repeat things. And it's so cool that you actually have a really diverse curriculum and you match that up with whoever comes in the door.
Yeah, I think people really benefit from that. You know, it's not just a one-size-fits-all. And we get out in the community, too. You know, if you're new to Juno, you don't know how to take the bus or, you know, let's go practice ordering a cup of coffee and let's show you the public library where you can access great resources. And so people get a lot of benefit from joining the program.
Cool. Okay, so that's one program. That's happening starting September 10th, right?
Yeah.
And that
yeah.
is, as you said, Monday through Friday, starts at 9 a.m.
Yep.
and goes to 11:30 every
yep.
day.
That's
okay.
it.
So that's a big time commitment and something that really gets people ready. You've got another boot camp kind of coming up, a prep boot camp, right?
Yeah, and this is another thing I think we're really known for is our GED program. And so if you're somebody that is looking to take and pass a GED test, this is going to be another three-week program. It's going to be in the afternoons, Monday through Thursday, from 2 o'clock to 4 o'clock. And it's just going to be prepping you on those skills that sort of go across the test. There's four tests for the GED, and so we're going to work on some of those skills to help you get ready. over those 3 weeks.
And these are both at their downtown location, right?
Yeah, downtown location across from Marine Park.
Ferry Way. Okay. And so what happens in that GED prep boot camp? I mean, that's an interesting one. Someone's maybe been out of school for a long time. They didn't get their diploma. They want to go back. It can be pretty intimidating, I would think, for people to think, oh, man, I got to remember trig or something.
Oh,
or I
got to
remember some, you know, whatever it would be.
The amount of math anxiety that I see on a daily basis is is pretty amazing, but totally understandable. You haven't done it in a while. You don't use it in your daily life. But you got to use it to get ready and pass your test, to get that piece of paper and move on to, you know, further education or a better job.
Piece of paper in a lot of cases. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, right.
So, yeah, it's just going to kind of look at those four different tests. There's science, social studies, math, and language arts, and help you on maybe those questions that are frequently missed, you know, focusing in on skills that go across tests, like understanding the main idea of something and being able to summarize things. In your own words, skills that we know you're going to use on all four tests that are going to help you kind of get over the hump. So this is more for somebody who's close, but just needs that boost to get over.
Right. Okay. And as you say, you guys are really known for that's one of the programs a lot of people know CERC for doing.
Yeah.
Okay. So what's this one, MATCH? What's that all about?
So MATCH is a kind of a new program, and we're really excited about it. So it's something that we've developed over the last couple of years. And it's really kind of grown, and this year it's going to be expanded. It used to be a one-week program where we would bring in people from rural communities to learn some soft skills and do some career awareness stuff. What do I want to do, and what's important to me in a job, and help people? We had you come be and talk to some of those people about what employers look for.
Yeah, it was a great experience just to go in and talk to folks who just had very general questions and sometimes specific questions about what was it all about? You know, how would you go about getting a marketing job somewhere or a job in an office and that kind of thing somewhere? And then people who are just interested in that sort of and just that feel, the idea of a manufacturer in Juneau and that kind of thing. Yeah, it was great.
Yeah, and kind of wondering, you know, what does an employer look for in a candidate? So taking that idea, and we're expanding it to an 8-week program. Instead of a 1-week program, it's going to be 8 weeks. And what we're going to do is, in the first week of that program, we're going to do that career awareness stuff. So helping people think about, what do I want to do? What skills do I have? What are my interests? And how does that align to careers that are out there?
Yeah, I remember when we were doing it, there was one guy there who was a carpenter, part of the union there.
Mm-hmm.
And that got a lot of people's interest. They maybe hadn't thought about that before, but they realized, oh, I always really liked doing that sort of thing. And that idea that people just start thinking about a career, you know, choice and strategizing towards a career as a different way of just doing jobs.
Yeah, and some of the people that have done this with us, it's not just your, you know, 19, 20, 21-year-old. There's people 40 years old that are like, I'm done doing what I'm doing. I need to do something different, but I don't know what that is.
Mm-hmm.
And we try to help them figure that out.
Yeah, that's really cool. So the expansion, why? What's the reasoning behind the expansion from what was just a really kind of a, not a cursory, but a, just a one-week program, all the way up to 8 weeks?
So what we've seen is that everything that we do at the Learning Connection that is career-related gets a lot of interest. In the fall, or in the spring a year ago or so, we did a class called Reading and Writing for Healthcare Careers, and people just came out for it. And we've been doing soft skill workshops related to careers in the workplace, and people have just been coming out for that. So we see that people want this. So what we're trying to do is work on a lot of the things that we're known for, our bread and butter of reading, writing, and math, but doing that in the context of careers. So for the first week, figuring out what it is you might want to do, you know, maybe you're not going to know exactly, but maybe you're going to realize, man, I do have an interest in healthcare, or I do have an interest in tech. And so then what we have is this curriculum where you can work on those basic skills, reading, writing, math, locating information, but in the context of a career. So doing a math problem that relates to healthcare rather than just doing math for math's sake. So building those skills, but in the context of a career, maybe be more engaging for you, and seeing how it actually applies to the real world and to a job that you might want in the future.
And after doing this for 8 weeks, now this is a this is happening Monday through Thursday, 9:30 through 1:30 p.m. So it's a good time commitment.
It is a commitment. So this is for, you know, for people that can commit the time. It's really not a I'll come in when I can, you know, sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And there is going to be a tuition for the program. We're not going to turn anybody away that can't afford it. So there will be scholarships available. But there will be a tuition because we're kind of expecting a commitment. We've got this new curriculum, and we're going to be investing a lot of time in it.
Yeah.
But I think the payoff is going to be huge for the people
that's
that
really
do commit.
Cool. All right, and then finally, this college prep, another boot camp, and this is a three-week program.
Yeah, so this is going to be in December. So the idea is it's going to happen right before you might start classes in January with the university. And so what we're seeing across the board is a lot of people who are looking to start school, but their skills in math or in reading and writing are not where they need to be to access the college-level classes. So people taking an entrance exam and then being placed in a class that's below college level, but you still have to pay college price for it.
Yeah, okay. So you've got two programs starting in a couple of weeks, both on September 10th. That's the English as a Second Language and Citizenship Boot Camp, and then also the GED Prep Boot Camp. Those are both starting then. So if people are interested in that, get in touch with you guys soon.
Yeah, yeah. You can call us, 586-5718. You can email me at learn@circ.org. Or you could stop by downtown. Every Friday we have a new student orientation at 11, just for people that are interested in trying to see if this is the right fit for them. And a great way to stay in touch with us is just to find us on Facebook and follow us there.
It's a great program you guys have. Tell me a little bit about how you guys are funded.
So we are funded through grants. And with our major funding for the adult ed program is through the Department of Labor. It's a federal grant with a state match. And that's one of the main ways. We're also funded through the Juno Community Foundation for that program, and we're really thankful for that funding. Really, we probably wouldn't be able to operate like and function without that support. And
so
we
a great
just
combination
get,
of local solar, sort of mm-hmm. philanthropic contribution through Juno Community Foundation, but then also state and federal. So it's
exactly.
It's kind of an example of those kinds of programs really hitting the street, right,
yeah.
and really making a difference in people's lives.
Yeah, and we're always turning over rocks and looking. We just recently were able to get some funding from the mines to help us bring in an AmeriCorps member to help. You know, our staff has decreased pretty drastically over the years mm-hmm. with cuts in funding, so we're really thankful for that. You know, the Douglas Dornan Fund helps us pay for testing fees for students because it's $120 to take the full battery, and just that alone can be a barrier for someone who's trying to get their GED.
Right. And then speaking of the staffing, are there opportunities for people to volunteer or to get involved in helping with this?
Absolutely. So if you go to tlcalaska.org, you'll see an opportunity to fill out an application to volunteer. Our biggest probably need is just support for English as a Second Language, because people do come in at a variety of levels. So if we don't have a class that fits somebody, we usually set them up with a tutor. And right now we have 22 tutors, but we always are accepting applications and looking for a right fit for somebody. So if any of these things sound interesting to you, check us out or stop in, and we could chat about how you might be a fit for us, and we can give you a great opportunity to volunteer.
Cool. Well, thanks, Jeff, for coming in and letting us know about it. Again, it's all happening at the Southeast Regional Resource Center, or CERC, down in Ferry Way, right downtown. And the two classes coming up right now, English as a Second Language and a Citizenship Boot Camp, and also GED Prep Boot Camp. Those are both starting September 10th. The Match Career Readiness Certification Program and the Prep Boot Camp for college is coming up October and then December. So you've got a little bit more time to think about those things. But if you want to get involved in any of those programs, let CERC know all about it. Jeff, thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
All about this.
Yeah. want to work at a job that contributes to the health of your community? Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium, or SERCH, is hiring. SERCH offers full-time jobs that include health, vision, and dental benefits, as well as paid time off and retirement savings. If you want to take your career to the next level, check out search.org/jobs. That's SEARCH.org/jobs. And view all open positions. Start a rewarding career helping others at SERCH. The career you've imagined is here. SERCH. Healthy is here.
And welcome back to Juno Afternoon. Andy Klein with you. And Dave Hansen has joined me. Dave is doing a presentation at the planetarium coming up. Dave, thanks so much for coming in and talking to us a little. And your presentation is about astrophotography.
That's right.
All right. So tell me a little bit about some of the basics of that that maybe people like typically get wrong.
Okay. Yeah. There's a few misconceptions about that. One of the biggest ones is that you need a telescope to do astrophotography. There are a lot of objects in the sky that are very big but very dim, so you can actually shoot them with a camera lens.
And this has to do with elapsed time on the lens, or what are some of the tricks that are used?
It has to do with the focal length of the lens, so sort of the magnification of the lens, and then matching that to how big the object is that you're shooting. You capture many hours of exposures and then combine those and come out with a beautiful image, hopefully, in the end.
What's sort of the focus of your talk? How are you structuring your talk?
I'm going to give just sort of a general introduction, and then I'm going to show a gallery of my pretty pictures and talk a little bit about the objects in the pictures. And then the third part of the presentation is a little more detailed sort of technical explanation of how it's done and why. When I've talked about the fact that my hobby is astrophotography, people seem pretty curious as to what it takes to get those pictures.
Well, also the frustration of doing that in Juneau. I can imagine the cloud cover comes in, right?
Even have to want it, yeah. An important aspect of being an astrophotographer, I guess, is being able to predict the weather. find those clear nights.
And patience. Right.
And, of course, we have the sun as well. Last night was the first night since April 20th that we've had true astronomical darkness.
Now, what does that mean? I don't know that term.
It means that the sun is at least 18 degrees below the horizon, and it means that then if you point a camera at the sky, you're not picking up any sunlight.
Otherwise, the sun isn't far enough up down on the horizon. It's still picking up reflection on the atmosphere is
exactly,
the idea. Okay.
Yeah, so we're in kind of this long twilight from April until August.
Right.
So I'm pretty excited that we're finally getting some real darkness.
I mean, I would think that the Southeast Alaska is in some ways a great place to do this work because there are areas where you can get away from light pollution. Right?
Absolutely. That is the big plus about doing this in Juneau is it's a very short trip to some very dark skies.
Yeah. Does going up higher, does that help? Or does that anything like that? Or?
Going up higher, you're shooting through less of the atmosphere, so shooting from the top of a mountain can be a good thing.
I mean, it does seem like the stars are brighter up there. I always wonder, is that just because I'm feeling great being on top of a mountain, or is it real? Are they really kind of clearer?
No, they're really clear.
Yeah.
But, of course, then it's a matter of getting equipment having electricity at the top of the mountain.
Are there things that you can do with basic equipment, even iPhones and things like that, to capture and to do some of the work that you do?
Sure. I mean, you can do wide field, just, you know, exposures of the Milky Way with either a phone or just a regular DSLR and a zoom lens. You can even take it further by making, you know, a fairly simple contraption called a barn door tracker that allows you to track the movement of the sky and take longer exposures without getting any streaking of the stars.
Hmm. Are there ways in which technology has really helped your hobby through the years?
Oh, absolutely. In the days of film, you only got one exposure, and you had to sit with looking through an eyepiece locked onto a star, making sure it doesn't drift during a 40 to a 60-minute exposure. And you're sitting out in the cold. You're Pretty soon you can't even see the star after a while. Your eyes play tricks on you.
And then you don't know what you have.
You got no idea what you have. Now it's all digital. So, you know, as that's advanced other areas of photography, it's really advanced astrophotography. We've got a lot of signal processing techniques we can do to really bring out the image.
Yeah, exciting. So when is this talk happening?
This will be at 7 o'clock in the evening on Tuesday, the 21st.
Okay.
At the Marie Drake Planetarium.
And such a cool place to be, obviously, talking about the work that you do.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's just such a wonderful venue there.
Great. Well, again, it's the Planetarium over at the Marie Drake. Dave Hansen's going to be talking all about astrophotography. Again, the date?
21st.
The 21st is when it's going to be happening, and starting at 7?
7 p.m.
7 p.m. All right. Well, Dave, thanks so much for coming in, letting us know about it, and good luck and clear skies to you.
Thank you. Okay. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Tribute to the great Aretha Franklin there with Seesaw. Joining me next, Jeremy Shea, news director from KTUO. Jeremy, thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Andy.
Let's talk a little bit about these elections coming up.
Yeah, so, you know, just as far as news coverage goes, we've got a lot of stuff out there. We produced candidate profiles on all of the Juneau area statehouse candidates that we've been airing over the last couple of weeks. And also, if you need to do your last-minute crash course, now's a good time. You know, Tuesday's
yes.
the primary.
If you've kind of been tracking, sort of, but not as much as maybe you should, this is the time to catch up. So where should people go?
So people should go to ktoo.org/elections, ktoo.org/elections. So the competitive primaries are House District 33, the Democrats. That's the seat that Sam Keto is vacating, House District 34. It's also a competitive Democratic primary. That's the seat that Justin Parrish is vacating. And then Senate District Q is not competitive right now at the primary level. In the
right. And some of the that's what's happening. Some of these elections, I mean, we're seeing more, maybe it's not more and more, but it seems like there's a lot of independent candidates happening in this election cycle.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of an interesting trend we're seeing. Locally, there's two independents who, you know, policy-wise, they've got a lot of things in common with your typical Democrats. You know, there's Elise Galvin running for Congress as an independent in the Democratic primary. For Senate District Q, that's the seat Senator Egan's vacating. We've got Don Etheridge, who is, he's running as an independent without running in the Democratic primary, so just in the general. And then I'm blanking on one.
Going through it in his brain. That's
yeah.
right. Well, let me ask you this. A typical voter going into a downtown precinct, what's going to be on their ballot that they're going to be seeing
if you're downtown,
on Tuesday?
So that you'll have the House District 33 ballot. You'll have the option of, you have to, you know, pick Republican or Democrat.
Right.
So the Republican one, you won't have anyone to vote for locally, at least in that one. If you're a Democrat, you'll have either James Hart is on the ballot. He's a Haynes guy, but he stopped campaigning and basically doesn't want to be considered, but he missed the deadline to have his name pulled off.
Oh, okay.
And then three other candidates. There's Sarah Hannon of Douglas, Steve Handy of Douglas, and Tom Morfitt of Haynes. So those are the three in the...
And the independent, this is one that Chris Diamond is also in this same race?
Right. Chris Diamond is in this race as an independent, but not running in the Democratic primary. So he is the, will be in the general election. So whoever goes on from the Democratic primary in this case will run off.
What would be the advantage of an independent running in the primary?
So this is the case that's been playing out with the governor's race, right? So Walker and Mallott are running as independents. They had the option after that Supreme Court case resolved itself to run in the Democratic primary. They opted not to. And ultimately, there will be a presumably there will be a strong Republican candidate for governor. So one advantage of running in the Democratic primary is you've got a two-way race come November instead of a three-way race.
If you're an independent but feel that you're very strong with Democrats, you could sort of get the tacit endorsement almost of the people voting in the party.
Right, and it just simplifies the ballot, right?
Right.
So a two-way race presumably is easier to win than a three-way race, depending on, well, I guess it just depends on what your party is and the dynamic of the other two.
Yeah, it's a strategic move.
It's just trickier.
Yeah, right.
So that's the advantage there.
Oh, interesting.
But, yeah, and then so for election night itself, Shelley Delaney and I will be hosting live coverage on the radio. We're going to be doing some interesting things on that same website I plugged earlier, kto.org/elections. We're going to pushing it to Facebook Live, so we're going to have some cameras in here while we're doing the radio thing.
Oh, cool.
And a bunch of data visualization. So David Purdy from the web team has built some cool tools that will suck in data from the State Division of Elections, their results almost in real time, and turn it into kind of human-readable graphs. And basically,
oh, very good.
So you can follow whatever races you want to follow.
And I asked you about downtown. I suppose I should also balance it out by asking you about Valley as well. I didn't mean to leave the Valley out
right,
on that.
Right, so the Valley, I should have my cheat sheet in front of me, sorry. The Valley, there's a competitive Democratic primary between Andy Story and Rob Edwardson. Rob Edwardson is an independent who is running as a Democrat.
Okay.
In the Democratic primary, not as a Democrat.
Interesting.
He's
okay.
an independent running as an independent in the Democratic primary.
Okay.
Right.
All right. And then the Republican race is Nan Kervis.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
And he's uncontested
right.
in that, so.
Okay. Well, interesting. It's competitive and contested races out there. And obviously encourage everyone to get out and vote on Tuesday and learn more about it by checking out the KTO resources and see the results live on KTO. Go to KTO.org to see the live stuff.
Yeah, KTO.org/elections and also Facebook Live, but we'll also park the video stream at that election site.
All right, sounds great. Jeremy Shea, news director from KTO, thanks for giving us an election update. Coming up next, here's Bird Note.
This is Bird Note. We asked David Sibley, creator and illustrator of the Sibley Guide to Birds, if he's seeing changes with birds as the result of changes in the environment.
Yeah, I see big, big changes. Now, my experience is mostly in the Northeast. I can think back to 1970 when I was a kid birding there and compare that to now and remember getting really excited and with my father and my brother jumping in the car to chase a red-bellied woodpecker that had shown up at a bird feeder near us in Connecticut. And now people laugh about that. It's red-bellied woodpecker is one of the commonest backyard birds in Connecticut through the whole state.
What about other species in the Northeast?
Wild turkey. Pileated woodpecker has become much more common. Cooper's hawk. They do really well in woodlands, which is what we have a lot of now in Connecticut. 100 years ago, it was all farmland, and now it's all reverted back to mostly forest. And species like eastern meadowlark and field sparrow and brown thrasher that like the fields and edges and hedgerows are having a hard time now that there's not very much farmland left. It's really a shift of habitat that has caused a shift in the species.
What changes in bird populations are you seeing? Share your story at birdnote.org.
Support comes from Southeast Living Magazine, Southeast Alaska's home, real estate, and lifestyle magazine, working to reach potential home buyers and featuring articles and tips on home improvement. Available at locations throughout Southeast. More at seakliving.com.
Welcome back to Juno Afternoon. Andy Klein with you. Casey Bain is here with me. Casey, thanks so much for coming in.
Well, thanks, Andy.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Casey's with the University of Alaska Southeast. You're the mine training coordinator, and you're helping coordinate a cool-sounding open house.
That's right.
Yeah.
I work for the University of Alaska Center for School of Career Education. We're going to have an open house next week on Wednesday, August 22nd, and it's going to be from 3 to 6 p.m. It's right over at the UAS Technical Education Center across the street from JDHS. the address.
Oh, that mysterious, that cool-looking place where there's all that equipment and stuff
going on
in there? Yeah.
We're opening the doors, and we want everyone to come out.
I want to go to that, yeah.
1415 Harbor Way, and this is going to be a great opportunity for the public to just come out to their university and see some potential employers and see some of the options that they can pursue.
Yeah.
We really wanted to invite all of Juno out. We just didn't want to invite our students. We wanted to invite everyone. There's so many opportunities in vocational training, and it's right in Juno's backyard.
This is like where people do like small engine repair classes and stuff like that, right?
Or large diesel engines.
Or big ones, yeah.
I personally work in mining. We only have 150 mine mechanics in the entire state of Alaska.
What goes into being a mine mechanic?
Well, mining relies a lot on heavy equipment.
Yeah.
Whether it's moving stock or mill work. And they need their own mechanics who are specially trained to fix this stuff. And typically what they have found is transient workers who come from the lower 48, they don't typically want to stay in Alaska for very long.
It's the old problem. You can get expertise here, but often it's just this lifestyle is just not for them.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And there's a turnover cost associated with it, and it's high. And so my mission essentially, aside from this open house, is to get more mine mechanics out there. But we have other classes. We have other programs. It's not just mining. We have health courses. We have welding courses. We have construction courses. And so if any of this has ever interested you, come on out on Wednesday.
What are people going to be, I think, what do you think people will be sort of surprised about when they walk in the doors there? What will they see? They'll go like, I had no idea this was in here.
Well, you know, we have a pretty cool mine simulator. I know it might be...
You're a little biased on the mine thing. Tell me about that. There's a mine simulator.
Right.
It looks like a mine shaft kind of thing?
Well,
or?
It's kind of like a flight simulator, except you're driving an underground haul truck.
Oh, okay.
And we actually have Greens Creek modeled. So you can, you know, take our AD45 Cat underground 40-ton haul truck, and even though you've never don't know how to turn it on, never driven it before, I'll show you how to drive it.
That sounds really cool.
Yeah. So
you rumble around in the seat and all that stuff?
Oh, yeah, it moves around.
Oh,
it moves
cool.
around. You get gradients, but everybody who comes out can have an opportunity to drive that, but that's not all we're going to have. We're going to also
have
some...
pretty cool.
Yeah, it's pretty
cool. I like that, yeah.
It's pretty cool, but we're also going to have some door prizes. They're secret at this point. You're just going to have to come to find out.
Okay.
I can say football might be a little hint on one prize, but... We're also going to have $100 tuition waivers available to students. Come and get a chance at getting that. That'll take $100 off your bill.
Now, this is an area where I think, like in the construction field, for instance, they're really like full-size construction stuff happens inside these buildings, right?
The construction program at UAS is phenomenal. They have a house build program where they take our students, they actually show them how to build houses. They teach them how to, they go out the road, I think. I'm not in the program. I wish I could give you a little bit more detail, but they spend a lot of time in the building and out in the field preparing these guys and girls for the work.
Yeah, that's really cool. And again, so you already listed it off, but do it for me one more time. All the different kind of technical fields that this place covers, and that people will be able to find out about at the
open
house.
We like to focus at UAS. We like to focus on. We have a construction program, a diesel power tech program. We have two different health programs, a health information management program. We also have a health science program where folks can come and get their CNA license or their pre-nursing work done, and then mining. You can come be a mine mechanic, or you can go learn how to weld. We also have folks can just come in and audit courses if this is something that you just want to learn how to do around the house. We have those kind of classes as well. We're also going to have some food on Wednesday. DuPont Dogs is going to come out, and they're going to put together some special menu items for us, some miner dogs, some construction dogs, some health science
they're
dogs.
Different.
We'll have to...
They'll
have some
subtle.
Different ingredients.
Okay.
I'm just going to have to... The only place you can get them is at UAS School of Career Ed, so
yeah,
Wednesday. Right. Another thing, I got to thank Affordable Auto over by Costco. They let us borrow there. I don't know what to call this, a snatch-and-grab tuition dollar where money's blowing around in an inflatable thing. Well, we're going to put tuition dollars in there, and for every one you grab, we're going to take it off your bill.
All right.
So we hope we have some events and things that will bring people out. We really just want you to understand that we're here and that we have opportunities for the folks in Juno.
And then are you kind of gearing up for school year? Is that something you're doing as well right now?
Fall registrations have completed.
Okay.
Folks should be registered for their classes, but think about spring. You know, spring registration is just around the corner. Come to the open house, take a look. Maybe you want to take a class just for fun. that's a great time to explore that option.
Yeah. What goes into prepping for your mining expertise and area of focus of study? What goes into preparing for those courses?
Well, with mining, our program is a pathway to get local youth and young adults here in Juneau jobs out of the mines. So we have an introductory program. I call it IMU, Introductions to Mining Occupations and Operations. I travel around Southeast Alaska every fall, visit high school seniors and juniors, and we bring them to Juneau. We teach them about the essence of mining, the beginning, why mining is important, why we need mining. And we give them some time on the simulator so they know how to drive a haul truck. We give them some just basic terminology.
And ideas of what different tasks are happening down there.
Exactly.
And that sort of thing.
We
yeah.
just try to give them a basic overview of what mining is, because
yeah.
you'd be surprised how many people don't know.
Well, I mean, I don't have a great grasp of
right.
it, right? And living here for many, many years.
And this is a mining town.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
And it has been since its founding.
Right.
So it's a mission that I'm constantly trying to spread. And I think it's a great thing for Juneau, and I think the School of Career Education is a great thing for Juneau.
Yeah.
And if I could share my contact information.
Sure, absolutely.
If anyone has any questions or comments, please reach me at 907-796-6427 or at my email at cnbain, B-A-I-N, at alaska.edu. Mm. You can also learn more about our programs on our website at uas.alaska.edu.
All right, Casey Bain from the UAS School of Career and Technical Education. Thanks so much for coming in, letting us know about it, and have a great open house on August 22nd.
Thank you.
All right.
Alaska's primary election is Tuesday. Catch up on the Juneau Area Statehouse candidates at kcoo.org/elections. Then after the polls close on Tuesday, join me, Shelley Delaney.
And me, Jeremy Shea.
As we host live primary election night coverage on KTOO, streaming, and Facebook Live.
That's kcoo.org/elections and live primary election night coverage from the KTOO newsroom beginning at 9 p.m. Tuesday.
And welcome back to Juneau Afternoon. Andy Klein, your host today. And now we've got coming into the studio two folks from Juneau Symphony. And it's Stan Lujan and Myrna Elgie are here to talk to me a little bit about the fundraiser that's coming up and also about the season that's coming up. So, Myrna, I know you're kind of helping organize and get together this fundraiser, the Wildlife Cruise.
Yes, I am. I'm the vice president of the Symphony Board now, and so a lot of things fall under my jurisdiction to take the load off of Stan here, who's the president. We have our Wildlife Cruise. It's been an annual event, and it's scheduled for September 1st out at Dornstadter Harbor, which is the Auk Bay Harbor, and the tickets are on sale. You can buy them at Hearthside or at the Jack or through the Symphony office.
So what do people see on this wildlife cruise? Is it kind of goes north, right? Is that right?
Generally, yeah. It does. And sometimes it depends on the weather as to whether they go very far or not. Or if we start out seeing lots of whales and other wildlife, they don't have to go very far at all.
That's right. That's right. And during the cruise, how is the symphony kind of woven in? Is there music and things like that happening on board?
Yes, yeah. There is a great group of symphony musicians. It's a trio this year, a cello and two flutes, and they will be providing the entertainment. Then we have delicious hors d'oeuvres that are included in the ticket price, and specialty imports. Our friend John DeCherney will be doing a wine tasting
Always brings the good stuff.
Yes. Really good stuff.
Right. That makes the cruise that much more fun, doesn't it?
For everyone,
yeah,
yes.
That's right. I've been out on it before, and, just great whale watching, sea lions, all that kind of stuff, and even just great bird watching can happen on the wildlife cruise as well.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because one of our wonderful patrons, Mary Wilson, who's a naturalist, will be on board, and she always provides interesting tidbits of information about what we're seeing and other background information. And over the years, we've kind of found that the whales really like cellos and flutes and other symphonic
instruments.
You think
they're drawn to the boat?
We had
a bunch of whales just lean up against the boat, and the cello music was just resonating out onto the water. It was just magical.
Well, that makes sense, actually, doesn't it? Maybe there is something. They're communicating, or they're at least liking that.
And then you think about cello itself is one of the only instruments that's closest to the human voice. That's why people really connect with the cello sound. It's the closest to the human vocal cords of any instrument.
I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. It's got that same tonal kind of
that's that
resonance
breath and
level.
Depth
yeah,
the same as a voice does.
Wow, I never
so
really realized
that. When people
hear
it, they almost feel connected, sort of at the womb. It's just really incredible.
Yeah, well, Stan, you're of course been spending a lot of time working on and planning the new season coming up.
Right.
So tell me a little bit about some of the highlights there.
Yeah, the new season is going to be fun. We're calling it the conductors of the Northwest, because all of our conductors are from the Northwest. The first in the lineup is Dwayne Corbin, and he comes out of Oregon, and he's just really incredible. He's been up here before playing for us, and actually a guest conductor with us as well, so he knows our symphony group a lot. So it's going to be really neat. It's going to be a good match. Along with the symphony that he's doing in November 10th, 11th, we're having Lisa Ibius, who was our concertmaster for a number of years, who now is doing advanced graduate study at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks, and has offered to come down and play a solo for us in that November concert. So that'll be wonderful to get Lisa back here in Juneau. She owns and operates the Alaska Dames, and so she has a quite expansive following here in Juneau.
Right, yes.
So that's the first lineup. The next one is in January 26th, 27th, and that's Tigran Arakalin. And Tigran is an Armenian-American who's now in Port Townsend, and he was the assistant conductor at the Whitcomb Symphony in Bellingham for a number of years, I think 3 or 4 years. And he is going to do Russian Romantics. That's going to be some beautiful pieces. And we're really blessed in his concert to have our solo winner from last year, Reese Bleakley, who will be doing some Tchaikovsky numbers on flute. And the magic about this pairing is that Tigran is also a world-renowned flautist.
Oh, okay.
So he's coming in 3 weeks to work with the orchestra, and mixed into that, he'll be working with Reese in preparing her a presentation in front with the symphony that evening.
Wow, that's probably a treat for both of them.
A treat.
To be really, yeah.
And Tigran has an incredible history with youth orchestras around the country, so that's going to be a perfect blend for that.
Very cool.
For that concert. And then the April concert, we're really happy to have William Todd Hunt. He's a local mm-hmm. conductor, and he's doing the Princess Sophia right now.
Sophia, yeah, right.
And that's just an incredible piece. It's an operatic piece, and he's chairing that. But he's agreed to do the April concert with us. And the beauty of Todd is that he's also a choral conductor. And we're going to bring Bruce Simons in to do that choral piece, but they'll be working in concert together. So we're able to not only do the symphonic pieces that he has lined up for his program, we're also going to be able to do the choral piece and bring in the Juno Chorus Group. And maybe the high school chorus group. That's still being shaped right now, but we're excited about that. So we don't want to leave our singers in Juno out.
No, right.
Exactly.
Very good.
Yeah, well,
no,
I might
you'll hear
about
it.
That.
You'll hear
yeah,
it. Yeah,
exactly. And then the last is the Pops. That's always a fun concert. And we're having Yaniv Attar, and he's an Israeli American, and just has an impeccable dossier. He's just an incredible young man. And when I interviewed him, he happened to be in Budapest 1 week, and then he was in Tel Aviv another week conducting. So he conducts all over the world, this fellow. And so we're really excited to have him. He's doing the Boston Pops. And with him in concert, we're going to be having an incredible pianist who's going to do Rhapsody in Blue. And that's, Jessica Koh. And she's a South Korean American, and she plays all over the place. I mean, she plays in Carnegie Hall and those kinds of places.
Wow.
So she happens to know Yaniv very well, so Yaniv is bringing her up at a very reasonable cost to us. So we're going to have a donor reception and also a fundraiser when she's here to play piano, maybe at the governor's mansion as we're planning. I kind of have to go back to William Todd's concert in April and say that he has a soloist coming. It's an operatic soloist who's going to do some really nice things, and his name is Jason. I'm trying to think of and Jason is Wixom, and Jason is going to be doing some beautiful pieces, musical pieces, choral pieces as our soloist.
Wow, that sounds
and
great.
And he is
yeah.
a really well thought of choral singer across the United States, and so we're able to capture him for that concert. So, and he's also a friend of Todd's, and so that really works well with us.
Can I ask a dumb question?
Sure.
I do this a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I ask dumb questions. I'm going to ask you something. So as a person that's watched symphonies and enjoyed them, I know that there's a difference conductor to conductor to conductor,
right.
And it's interesting that you're featuring these conductors and really focusing on conductors of the Northwest.
Mm-hmm.
So explain to me the difference, conductor to conductor. How do they convey their style? How do they put their fingerprint on a work of music that's sometimes more than 100 years old work of music that's been done many, many times? How does a conductor shape that and make his interpretation of that
Would you like to
expressed?
Well, I can attempt to answer that somewhat for you. For one thing, they're limited by our budget. The Juno Symphony.
Let's just get down to brass tacks.
And so, you know, it depends on how many players we need to bring in to perform a specific piece to supplement our local players, who are all volunteers, and they give hundreds of hours to us free of charge. And that's one thing. Another thing is how they direct the players. I've heard some of our musicians say that they can get clear instructions from certain music directors where others not as easily. So that's another thing. And other than that, my limited musical experience with a symphony probably doesn't. I can't think of anything.
One thing I was wondering is are there ways of kind of classifying the way a conductor would be? Like, if you were to hear one piece of work, you'd say, "Oh, well, that's a very classical conductor. That's someone who's interpreting it mm-hmm. in a very mm-hmm. kind of straightforward way." That's
right.
Whereas another conductor might be considered a
right.
different.
What we, for instance, with Troy Quinn, when we hired him.
Mm-hmm.
He was one that was more eclectic. He could do John Williams, and he could do Beethoven's Ninth, and he could do a variety of things. And so he's a conductor's conductor to some extent. So he can do a symphonic piece, a Russian Romantics piece, a Psalms and Fanfare piece, or a Boston Pops piece. He could do it all.
Right.
And so when we go out and do the search, we'll be doing the search this next year, we're looking for people that are versatile. Now, if you're not as versatile, you may be, say, a violin player or a viola player or a cello player or a brass player, and your expertise may be a little bit more focused on that, and unless you have years of expanding that horizon, you may not be able to really connect to all of the musicians in the orchestra. So we want to make sure that one of the criteria we look at is how diverse they are so that we can really hit the variety of music throughout a season.
Because a conductor would naturally concentrate on the strings if they're a violin player,
That's right. Even how you position your group, say violin ones or violin twos, how do you mix them up so you put some that are more proficient at this level and others that are really moving ahead at Mach speed but not quite there, and how do you mix it all together so that they all sound, once it hits the audience's ear, like beautiful music.
Yeah, that's something I never knew. I've never even thought about why people sit where they do in the orchestra, and then that's up to the conductor about this to be here because it's going to sound this different way.
That's right. And then each section has their own principal violin, principal viola, principal cello, principal bass, bass, principal brass, and so there's a principal that is sort of in charge. They're kind of like the hierarchy, the top level, and they're the ones that really keep that section together. And it's kind of neat. So that's part of the formula, too, to have good principal people. Like, for instance, Sally Schlichtig, she is our principal flute player. And so she's stepping back this year because of some personal reasons, but she's helped me put together other flautists in town that are high caliber that can take over the principal position in each one of these other concerts. So we've got them spread out between four different events.
Is there a lot more work for the principal?
A lot more work. They have to look at the music. Sometimes they have to change notes and those kind of things. Mm-hmm. They have to make sure they blend and don't sound louder than another section. Mm. And they're just kind of really orchestrating the whole thing like a miniature conductor in a way through their instrument.
Right. Well, for the wildlife cruise, let's talk about that for a second. How can people find out about it and get on board?
Oh, great. Thanks, Andy, for having us today, and Kate, too, as well. This is wonderful. We have posters up all over town. I took a couple out Dock Bay because we do have symphony lovers out there as well. And just remember, it's September 1st. We're very thankful to Alan Marine for helping us sponsor this. And we're going to be boarding around 1:30 Saturday, September 1st. Departure will be at 2 o'clock. So be sure not to wait until the last minute to buy your ticket. We usually sell out. I think we always sell out or very close to it. And we will return to the harbor on or before 5 p.m. that day.
Satisfied with the most delicious appetizers imaginable and delicious wine from John DeCherney.
Yes.
You can't go wrong.
And beautiful music. And whales
beautiful music.
Rubbing up against the side of the boat.
And we'd like to thank our musicians, Sandy Portier, she's a flautist, Lisa Ray, and Amy Lujan, who's a cellist. And so we have the two flute players and the cello, and they've searched far and wide for compositions that are specific for the flute and the cello working together. Usually it's a violin and a cello. And so this is going to be a magnificent presentation. They've been working on this, I know.
Well, it sounds like a great cruise. Thanks so much for letting us know about it. Have a great season coming up.
And thanks
so much for coming in.
Thank you very much.
Okay. And that's it for a Juno Afternoon today.